Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 239 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley. And today's episode is on how do life woes impact your psychology journey. And is Friday the 17th of November 2023 as I record this. So today's episode is a bit of a longer one. This is really useful, really impactful, and we actually get very, very personal because, let's face it, it doesn't matter what branch of psychology you want to work in, it doesn't matter if you're fully qualified or if you're a psychology student, be it undergrad, master's, PhD, whatever, or maybe even a 16 to 18 year-old education. Life will happen and it will disrupt your psychology journey. Something big will happen along the way, be it a death of a loved one, a massive breakup, or something quite tragic happening, because your mental or your physical health might deteriorate. Something is going to happen on this psychology journey. But I think the key, at least from my own experiences, is that it doesn't matter what happens to you, it's your response that matters. Because you can either let something knock you down on the floor and keep you down, or you can somehow, even though this is impossible, I think, at times, or at least it feels impossible, you can get up, and you can force yourself forward. One baby step at a time, maybe one massive leap, and then maybe you fall down again. But you keep moving forward for your psychology journey. So this is a great episode. I loved it. This is actually one of the only things I've managed to do this week, because I've been so busy. But I'm so proud of this. And to be honest, it also meant that I get to talk about some other things though, which have actually been really useful to me. So you've got that to look forward to in the content part of today's episode. So moving on to the psychology news section, we're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest, and the first one I think is very apt at the moment. Smart drugs aren't so smart after all. According to previous research, most university students think it's normal to use drugs prescribed for conditions such as ADHD and narcolepsy as cognitive enhancers. Many students have a few qualms taking a dose with the aim of improving focus and academic performance. For those that use these medications to manage a condition, they can be life-changing. However, a recent study in Science Advances has found that three commonly used smart drugs reduce the quality of effort and increase time taken to complete a decision-making task when taken by the cognitively healthy people. So this, I think, is definitely quite a useful one because, hell, I'm a university student. Quite a few listeners of the podcast, they're university students, and I think even some fully qualified psychologists have actually thought about it once or twice because they were students once. So I've never thought about doing this because I'm flat out against drugs myself, but I can see the appeal. I can understand why students might want to do this. But when you think about the health consequences, because do not quote me on this, but I remember reading somewhere that if you take Ritalin and you don't have ADHD, then it has massive side effects. And this research also supports that. So we might think that we're improving ourselves and we're improving our ability to focus, but in reality, we're actually harming it. So it's interesting, but I also think that even though this is useful research to find out that why we shouldn't do it in the first place, I think we should actually take a step back, because if universities want to sort of use this in a drug prevention scheme or program, maybe we should actually look at why students feel the need to want to take drugs in the first place. Because is this something about the university environment? Is this something about a particular school or a particular subject? Yeah, because I imagine more demanding subjects might have more students wanting to do this. So, and if that's true, which I'm not saying it is at all, I think that if that is the case, could we possibly make a subject, maybe not change the course itself, but maybe change students' perceptions, or just help them cope with the demanding nature of the course without resorting to drugs, which could be dangerous. So I think that might be a possible next step. So the second one is, smell changes how we see colour. No end of research shows that input from one scent can influence perceptions of another. Coffee, drunk from a white mug, tastes nearly twice as bitterly intense as a coffee drunk from a clear mug, for example, and we are prone to perceiving a orange-coloured, cherry-flavoured drink as tasting of orange. Now, a new work led by Ryan J. Ward at Liverpool John Moores University, published in Frontiers in Psychology, but that was all quite a mouthful, but it was a new cross-modal perception. Odours can affect our perceptions of colour. While some associations are unsurprising, such as caramel shifting a perceived colour towards a brand yellow, others aren't so obvious. So I'm not actually going to click on the article and go into anything in too much depth, but there is one problem I can automatically see, because mainly because of the example and because I've read other research papers on this before. I mean, I think this is basically as problematic as social priming researcher. And I think that this is the problem for quite a lot of social psychology research, and basically most studies done before the replication crisis, because coffee drunk from a white mug tastes nearly as bitterly intense as coffee drunk from a clear mug. I mean, I cannot think of any methodology that would make that bulletproof, because that is so subjective. Because I know this is not connected to social priming, but it's the research methodologies and the flaws that make my mind go to it. For example, the psychology study about if you hold a warm mug of coffee, then you're going to perceive people as more positive. Now, I think we can all think about 10 other factors that would influence that person to be more positive. And I just cannot see how a warm mug or a coffee drunk from a white mug could possibly be a major, major factor in any sort of behaviour. So I think that as nice as these findings might be, I cannot see the methodology being bulletproof or, to be honest, very good. So the last one is, self-promotion, but not antagonism, in narcissism linked to progesterone. Oh, okay. According to a popular model, grandiose narcissism has two distinct facets. The agentic facet, which is the tendency to self-promote, to win other people's esteem and social influence, and the antagonistic facet, which manifests as arrogant, demeaning, argumentative, or exploitive behaviour. Exactly what might cause grandiose narcissism is unclear. Previous research has suggested a possible link to progesterone, but findings have been mixed. However, with Zangonisky and a colleague's new paper, we may now know why those high levels of progesterone score higher on measures of agentic, though not antagonistic, narcissism. So I'm not actually going to link on that, but I always find this sort of research quite interesting, because this is another good example about how our biology can impact our behaviour. And progesterone, because I always find it like quite funny though, because of course it's so like male linked and a whole bunch of like other stuff. So what was this, actually not a lot that I can actually say like about this. I do find biological and psychology research interesting. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the personal update. So we're moving on to the personal update. This week has been really, really busy. I've done so much university stuff and I've gone so much done university-wise that I'm so looking forward to having a break from university at some point so I could focus on my stuff. But I'm really pleased though about the research that I'm going to be doing for my master's like dissertation. It's actually been submitted to ethics, so the ethics committee is now going to be reviewing my ethics application, the research that I'm like going to be doing, the survey that I'm going to be asking participants to like fill up, and I should hear back from them in a maximum of 2 weeks. And I do actually want to talk about this for a moment, because I know that the ethics committee, I know that the whole ethics procedure and what actually goes into an ethics application is quite often filled up with quite a lot of like mystery when it comes to like psychology students, because we don't know, because we don't normally have to do this at all until master's level or something quite similar. So I would say that the ethics application, of course, at my university, so at the University of Kent, though, so I cannot say that this is applicable for every single university, but I imagine that it's not too like different though. So it covers quite a lot. It covers a lot more detail that I thought you would actually need to like go in there. So one of the things that it asks you is a few to explain how you're getting your participants, just so they know that you're getting them like legally, etc. It also asks you about your reason for doing your research, so that's actually quite interesting there, because you are basically going to the literature background. And then it mainly talks about your methodology, because if your study is going to harm people, then it should be laid out in your methodology how you're going to harm people, and basically how you're going to minimise that. But if you are going to harm people, which, come on, no one should actually be doing, and the chance that actually happening is minuscule, then the ethics committee can actually see that in your ethics application, and they can reject it, or to be honest, the chance of them actually rejecting it is really small. They just like kick it back and they just say, make these changes so we can approve it next time. And then it also goes into quite a few other details, because any material you're going to be using in your study, you actually have to send along. So long that this includes your debriefing form, your informed consent, your information sheet, and your survey, and basically list of the tasks that you're going to ask them to do though. So it was quite a learning curve. It was quite interesting to actually see how it's done. But there was also a massive section on terrorism, because in the UK we have the Terrorism Act and something 2010, I think, which makes it illegal to distribute terrorist-related materials. So the ethics committee was basically just making sure that I wasn't doing terrorism like research and stuff like that. So that was quite interesting. Ethics is very good, and I certainly don't think it's as scary as most like psychology students I think it is. And then I've been doing like tons of other like bits and pieces. Like I went out for dinner with a friend on like Monday, made a joke like to them about, now that I've got quite a few friends, made the joke about that, well, but friends actually take like so much time, which, oh, they do. Like, I'm out for most of the weekend doing like different like bits and pieces, so like working at the university and like some other bits. Very, very busy, and I'm looking forward to next week, well, when things are calmer down a little bit. And a massive thank you for the positive comments about last week's podcast episode about transgender stuff. Some have actually got tons of like different comments. Some have emailed me personally, but there was someone like YouTube that I wanted to like read out. So a massive thank you to at MST Shargrill Begum. I'm so sorry, I probably butchered that. I really do apologize. Some about the how can a therapist and a parent support transgender teenagers. She has said wonderful video, and about the non-binary light video, which she has said excellent video. So a massive like a thank you, because to be honest, I was really scared about putting out these podcast episodes, because when I did this sort of stuff back in June, I received a lot of hate, including some quite disgusting hate, which did make me cringe. But I wanted to do this podcast episode out of respect for my friends, well, because tomorrow, September the 18th, I'm actually going to a transgender Remembrance Day service. So we're going to honour all the trans people that have been murdered throughout the world, like in the past year. And I mean, there's over 391, like one person that was like telling me, and that was about 2 weeks ago. So the number's probably up to about 400 murders now, which is disgusting. So I want to go, I want to pay my respects and like stuff. And I also had like a really quite interesting comment from Eliza G on like a YouTube, and I'm not actually going to like read it out here, well, because it's like religious based, but I think it's really interesting, and it actually reminds me of like what an old friend of mine was actually saying that, because he was a like trans man, and he was also really like religious, and I was actually talking to him like about it, and like he was saying, oh yeah, like if you actually read the Bible, then there is actually quite a lot of like supporting the Bible for like trans people, gay people, and like as such. Not some, it's actually really nice that Elijah on like a YouTube actually like a detailed it out. So thank you. And as always, I always absolutely love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, ConnorWiley@ConnorWiley.net. You can always leave a comment on the show notes at ConnorWiley.net/podcast. You can always tweet me on Twitter at SciFiWiley. I always love to hear from all of you, because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And I also learn a lot from comments too. So massive thank you for commenting. And today's episode has been sponsored by Careers in Psychology, a guide to careers in clinical psychology, forensic psychology, business psychology, and more. So this is an absolute brilliant book for today's episode, because today's episode mainly focuses on your psychology journey, and having a like career in mind, and also knowing like how to actually get to a psychology career is a really important part of your like psychology journey, because even though your psychology journey will never end, having a career and actually getting into a career is actually a brilliant stepping stone, or a great signpost that you were to actually aim for in your psychology journey, though. So it's great, really easy to understand book. Covers a wide range of psychology careers, just so you can understand what different options are available with you if you want a career in psychology, what makes all of these different careers different from one another, and also how do you get into them. So there's a lot of like really good stuff there. So that is Careers in Psychology, a guide to careers in clinical psychology, forensic psychology, business psychology, and more. available for all major ebook retailers, and you can get the paperback and the hardback version from Amazon, your local bookstore or local library if you request it. So what Whilst Buying Books helps us to support the editing and the creation of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And as always, a massive thank you to my patrons, because your support shows that you like the show and you want it to continue. So if you want to become a patron and to get tons of great rewards, then you now can. patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So with that's enough of the personality, let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about how life votes impact your psychology journey. This is a brilliant episode. I'm really excited for this because this is just, I've been wanting to do this episode for quite a few weeks. So let's dive into it. Why am I doing this a podcast episode, and what will the structure be? Originally, I wanted to write this a podcast episode last week because USA Today best-selling author Christina Kaplan Rush, whom I have a fairly good working relationship with, and Dr. Maria Trent of the Aspiring Psychology podcast, but are two very good resources. I'll quote a little from Chris because what she said really hits home, and then Dr. Anne Marie Trent gave me a lot of ideas about how to frame this for other psychology people. However, I've been wanting to do this sort of a podcast episode since my last meltdown, at the time of recording anyway, in Newcastle, in late October 2023. Due to this meltdown, or that particular one, taught me a lot, and it framed a lot for me, and the different things that I want to talk about in today's podcast episode. Mainly because it all really helped me to actually frame my recovery better. And for newer listeners of the podcast, if you want to learn more about my own mental health difficulties that were amplified in August 2023, then please check out the podcast episode entitled What is Person-Centered Therapy? And What is Emotional Dependence and Locus of Evaluation? Anyway, for the rest of the podcast episode, I'll be exploring some general life roles and life events that might affect you on your psychology journey. Then I'll talk about them and reflect on them. Then I'll narrow in on my own experiences using a brilliant quote from Chris's blog post. Afterwards, I'll explain why Chris's blog post has a lot of powerful lessons for all of us. And it's also worth noting that the life events I'll be covering are death and grief, the end of a major relationship, and mental health. How can death and grief impact your psychology journey? When someone major in our family or social network dies, then this is extremely impactful on us. Maybe a parent, a close family member, or a very close friend dies, and you have to deal with all the grief, funeral arrangements, and everything else that is forced on you when someone in Poland dies. If this happens to a psychology student, then this might mean that you cannot focus on your studies, you might not be able to focus on exams, and you might miss deadlines because you're dealing with a lot. Equally, if you're more advanced in your psychology journey, then you might have the same problems as the professionals, even more so if you're on professional placement during your Doctorate of Clinical Psychology. Furthermore, if you're a psychology professional, like a clinical psychologist working in a service that involves a lot of grief and trauma, as well as if you know that a lot of our clients with mental health difficulties associated with cancer deaths come in, then this could be very upsetting and triggering for you. Then this might have a knock-on effect on your work, your ability to focus, and your ability to deliver high-quality care that our clients deserve and come to us for. None of these effects or impacts that make you a badder person. It simply makes you human, relatable, and it certainly doesn't make you weak or anything. Therefore, when there is a death in the family or your social network, you need to grieve. You need to process your emotions, and you need to make sure that you're going to be okay. If you're a psychology student, then talk at your university. Because I know at my university, there's a lot of different things in place for students. They need a small break whilst they focus on things outside of their control. So make sure you contact your university, see what your school or department offers, and even if they cannot help you, they might be able to signpost you to other services. Because I was talking to one mature master's student the other week, and it turned out that her father had died of dementia last year, so she needed an intermission. And I'm telling you this because I want you to know that asking the university for an intermission is okay. You can do that, and it won't end your life as you know it. And it doesn't make you a failure or a lesser student. And just for what I also just want to mention that I'm really glad that I actually proofread these podcast episodes like as I'm doing it, because the original blog post was actually about to say something a lot worse. Worse than that, because I would have missed out the word not. So that would have read very, very badly. So but going back to the blog post. So you have to do what is right for you, and that is something I'm learning more and more as time goes on. In addition, if you're a psychology professional, then definitely consider taking some time off and focusing on processing your feelings. Do what you need to do, and then return to work. And even then, when you return to work, well, what I've heard is that you can talk to your line manager and see if you can be given caseloads that are away from your deaf egg experience, and you can slowly get back at work. Which actually might be quite nice, because you'll be dealing with a few clients, so that you can get the paperwork done without being snowed under. Between seeing tons of clients and the mountain of paperwork that grows more and more with each passing day. How the end of a major relationship impacts your psychology journey. So whilst I'm hardly qualified to talk about this point, but I cannot stress that enough, because I've never been in a relationship, I still know stuff. But this will be a briefer section, which normally I laugh at, because whenever I say something is actually going to be brave, it normally ends about 1,000 words later. Thankfully, this was a briefer section, I promise. So you might be a psychology student or a psychologist, and your relationship of 5 years, and you thought they were the one, is over. The relationship broke up and you would be feeling a lot of pain. That is perfectly normal, and you have every single right to feel that pain, upset and confusion. Don't let anyone else tell you that you're not entitled to feel that pain. As well as you might even feel a little depressed, and you might not be able to get out of bed, or you won't feel like moving or doing much for a few days. And when this does happen, then life can feel a little hopeless, joyless, and so like you'll never be able to find happiness again. And there is a minor problem with our profession, especially in clinical psychology. Because if you're thinking like that, then if you go into work and hear about a client's negative egg experiences for like 8 hours straight, or to be honest, something like that, then you're hardly going to feel any better about life. Therefore, it might be an idea, when we're experiencing at the end of a major relationship, to take 1 or 2 days off, so we can process our emotions, get ourselves together, and go back to work or university feeling a little better, because we still will feel bad, a little joyless and a little empty. However, the best cure for this sort of breakup loss is living, socializing and just being around other people that we like and everyone else that says that you will find love again. And whilst I've never been in a relationship, my former emotional dependency still made me feel like that whenever I lost a great friend. And I always did manage to find a friend again. So you really can find love and friends and everything again. But you have to keep living and moving forward. See, briefer, I told you guys. How mental health impacts your psychology journey. So I've already spoken a lot on the podcast about my own mental health breakdowns, my child abuse and trauma. So I won't go into it in too much depth because you can look at past episodes of that. Yeah, something I have noticed, and this is not a rule of thumb or generalisation, that some people attracted to psychology do have their own mental health difficulties and a past. For example, I have my trauma, self-harming and a suicide. A woman in my cohort has anxiety and another woman has had domestic violence against her in the past. And at some point, if you've had a traumatic past, you will break and you will shatter. And this will put your entire psychology journey up in the air, because you have to focus on your recovery. Especially as I was out for dinner with a friend last night. Well, as I wrote this like Tuesday, and they were saying that they're 25 now, and it is only now they're comfortable admitting they've recovered from their trauma. And their trauma happened about 12 or 13. I couldn't quite pin it down, but because of the school year that they mentioned, it's about them. And that was a single incident that had 5 years of quite horrific consequences for them. Then it is about them recovering from the aftermath. Now that was a very hard pill for me to swallow, because it basically meant it took them about a decade to recover. Which, I mean, that is hard for me to understand. And to be honest, I don't want to admit it at the moment that it will take me that long, probably. Because my mind is still very much in the, I want to recover now or within a few months. I know that won't happen. And I study psychology for a living. But that's why focusing on recovery is critical. And that's basically what I've been doing since August 2023. I've been trying to recover, get myself solid again, whatever that means. And I want to be in a position in my life where I'm okay, which, to be honest, I am. And also, do I know what okay looks like? No, not really. But to be honest, after my counselling session on Wednesday, I've sort of got a rough idea. See, since I've never been okay, I'm a survivor, and it is all I know. I don't know how to live. I don't know how not to be on high alert. And because a lot of my trauma responses, like my emotional dependency, have been dealt with, I have no idea how to experience certain things. For example, before, my template of what a close friendship looked like was intensive, all-consuming, very toxic, and it wasn't healthy at all. But now I have a few close-like friendships, and it feels weird to me because they aren't intense. They aren't all consuming, and they're healthy for the first time. Anyway, though, so we're linking back to your psychology journey. So on Tuesday, when I wrote this, I was honestly scared at that moment because I was still having small meltdowns. I had my breakdown on the 13th of August 2023. Then I had my first meltdown in early September. Then I had another meltdown 6 weeks later. Also, I am beginning to realise that I used to be perfectly okay with so many psychology topics. I was happy to learn about self-harm, suicide, trauma, and real-world experiences of the amazing clients that we get to help. But now, this is quite scary, I think, even now. I'm starting to find out that I'm actually not as resilient to certain things as I once was, and certain psychology topics are triggering or upsetting to hear about. Not when I read about them or learn about them in a lecture per se, but in the real world when people actually have to deal with these things. I'm not always okay with that, and that does scare me, because you all know I love psychology, I love this podcast, and I love clinical psychology tons. It is my world, it's my domain, and it is where I want to work so badly in the future, because I do love this profession. Therefore, with me still having meltdowns on occasion, with me still being scared, fragile, and not always okay with my own past, my own mental health, I am scared that I will never be okay enough to do this work I want to do so badly. That does scare me, and I also know that I'm not the only person that feels like this. In addition, these feelings aren't always helped by the way that my life is stupidly busy. For example, my master's degree takes up a lot of my time, as you would expect. My Mondays and Fridays are busy helping out a friend run his contra group for his PhD, and even my Thursdays, which look free on a paper, are busy because of my counselling, which actually ended this week. And it is a very weird time. Yet this week I was actually working all day Thursday. Well, anyway, so I can't really complain too much, because that was my own fault. So I raise this because normally in therapy and other mental health work, we always try to say to a client that you need to find activities that make you happy, as well as that you need structure and routine. At least I do, because of my autism. However, this is difficult because I do have a good structure and routine, but I'm unable to focus on writing, publishing and my business as much as I want to. Now, I know this isn't very relatable, but you can substitute it for any hobby or any other activity that keeps you grounded and really helps. I used to be very stressed about my lack of writing time, but unfortunately, Chris's husband, Dean Wesley Smith, who, let me just say, is a sensational writer, and I do actually have a very good working relationship with him, had shattered a shoulder after a charity one weekend. So Chris wrote a blog post with something that I wanted to quote, and then I'll explain why this is useful for all of us in terms of mental health recovery and your psychology journey. Open quote. I know that my mind will be very busy with the changes to our lives. We have to make adjustments for the next several months as Dean Hills. As I've written before, life happens. There's a ruder word, but I want to keep this podcast clean. We all have to deal with those things and take the time out to work through them. Sometimes writing is impossible. Sometimes writing what you were writing before the event is impossible either, at least not for a while. Maybe not at all. Events change you. The person I was before Dean fell is not the person I am now. Dean is not the same person either. We don't know how much will change, but some things will. Other things won't. We're both writers, after all. Close the quote. As a result, there are three things that I want to reflect on here. The first paragraph stresses how when something happens, our minds are very busy and we have to change and adapt to a new reality. For Chris, this meant adapting in to a new routine to help Dean heal and recover from his shattered shoulder. For me, this meant that I needed to allow myself to change and adapt, because my mind was filled with recovering, being okay, and adapting to a very new and quite exciting reality. A reality where I'm loved, I'm no longer at a risk, and a reality where I can be me without the threat of death. after a decade of their reality that is extremely hard to get used to. Secondly, I want to reflect on the next few paragraphs, because Chris points out how in life, life events and life routes will always happen, and you cannot control them. These will happen because this is just how life works. Yet it is our job and our responsibility to work through them so we can keep living, enjoying life and having fun. As well as you can always change a writing for another activity that brings you joy. So if you were doing an activity, then maybe you need to stop for a while or slow down or change it entirely. I've written a lot since my breakdown. I've written a lot of science fiction, some fantasy and some mystery. But I've actually got to get back to my Betty English series, because there's some short stories I really, really want to write. I just haven't had time, sadly. But I've had a lot of critical voice when it comes to romance. Since a good romance is positive, happy, and there is a chemistry between the two love interests. And I don't know if I can go into that headspace at the moment where I can be so positive, so focused on romance, and hit all the traditional romance expectations that readers love. I also laugh because I got this really sweet email from this reader, because she read my romance, a short story, Co-December Night, and she loved it. She was so positive and she was so grateful for me writing it. So those are the sort of romances that I want to go back to. But again, it's this sort of problem. At this moment in time, can I go back to writing something so positive? I'm not sure. Yet that doesn't make me a failure. It just means that I don't want to go there at the moment. But I will in the future. And I will. Because I am a writer. But right now, I do have to focus on adapting to this new reality and recovering first. Finally, Chris talks about events are changing you, and this is extremely true. Since like Chris, ever since my life changing event, I have not been the same person. I can feel emotions for starters. I'm no longer a survivor, and I am a shard of the person that I used to be in a good way, and that is extremely hard. But I love when I'm able to read that quote, because it was meaningful, because I am changing. That's okay, because there is always a lot of stuff that doesn't change. I'm still a podcaster. I'm still a writer. I'm still a business owner, a psychology student. And I still have my amazing listeners, readers, and family that loves me. As well as I have a group of friends that is growing, and I'm like happy with even though like one of them decided to start texting me during a podcast episode, so I had to put it on mute, because normally no one wants to contact me when I'm recording a podcast episode, even though they didn't know, but still. People actually want to contact me for social reasons, so that's also like quite new and quite wonderful. So whenever you feel like your life is changing and it's shattering, just know that things will change and you will have on your recovery and adapting. Yet there are always things that don't change, and they will always stay the same too. Conclusion and a footnote on Spoon's theory. So at the end of this rather long podcast episode, I want to remind you that life throws will happen. You will be upset, blindsided, and you might even think that you're drowning. Just to make sure that you process your feelings, seek professional help if you need to, and just to make sure that you're okay. You will have to adapt and change because of your life throw. And I won't pretend that you won't have to. And chances are you might be a different person afterwards. And that's okay too. As long as you know when to get professional help if needed. and you focus on the things that are the same too. Personally, I'm having to really prioritize these days because I am still not 100% and I'm still learning and I'm still trying to train the new me about certain aspects of my life. For example, earlier today, when I wrote this podcast episode, I wanted to get up at 7 a.m, be on my laptop doing some work by 8 o'clock, but I didn't get up and I was too scared about stuff and I was struggling a little, so I woke up at 8 and I got to my laptop about 9:20. It wasn't ideal, but I was compassionate because I'm still learning that is still a lot better than summer Tuesdays, since Tuesdays are my only 3 days, to be honest. And there was one Tuesday quite a while back where I got nothing done. I did 1 hour and it's all I could do because I was so down. Therefore, I really have to focus and really prioritize what I absolutely have to get done that day though. Because if you're on my email list, then you might know I've not emailed for ages. And I keep wanting to, but again, I've got to prioritize. Because I've got to focus on the podcast, writing, and the various online courses that I've paid for. Then university work takes up a lot of my time too. But that's okay. And remembering Spoon's theory helps. And that was a previous podcast episode that I really do recommend. So the last paragraph. When life events happen, the old saying, life is what you make it, still holds true. You can allow life events to harm and control you, like I did for a decade. Or you can start walking the very long and hard, but joyous journey towards recovering and getting past your life events too. But this is a choice, a hard one. But the end result is all within your power. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. I know that I did. I loved this episode and I really hope that this is useful with you. If you know anyone who would like today's episode, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, then definitely check out Careers in Psychology, a guide to careers in clinical psychology, forensic psychology, business psychology and more, available in all the usual places. And if you want to become a patron, then you can at patreon.com/ The Psychology Wire Podcast. Or if you wanted to buy me a coffee, then you can at buymeacoffee.com/ Con Whiteley. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwhiteley.net. So have a great day and I'll see you next time.